Redbox Media Programming is brought to you by Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at caneford.com. Woodhill Community Center. Have a hand in the heart of the city. Support their mission with your donations at woodhillcommunitycenter.org. Toyota on Nicholasville Superstore. Online consultants are standing by right now to help you find your next Toyota. Visit toyotaonnicholasville.com. Lexus of Lexington, home of the best-selling Lexus IS. Find yours today at lexusoflexington.com.
Welcome to the Salt and Light Podcast. Be salt and light, glorifying the Lord by your life.
Hey everybody, welcome to this edition of the Salt and Light Podcast. I am your host, Chuck Fulkerson, joined by the efficacious Annie Fulkerson.
Efficacious? That means, wait, no, I know this. Like it works. I use this word. How do I describe it? I'm so excited. I know it. I can't figure out how to describe it. Wait.
Please use it in a sentence. She's stumped.
No, wait. It's
this
like
game is called Stump like to be the Rocket
like,
Scientist.
Like it works the way it's supposed to. It performs the way it's designed. What?
It's actually pronounced efficacious. I mispronounced it.
Give me the definition of whatever word you looked up then.
Efficient / productive.
How do you spell that?
EFFICACIOUS.
The pronunciation is giving you efficacious?
Efficacious.
Efficacious?
Uh-huh.
Efficacious usually means...
Yeah.
Wait. So, no. See? Efficacious. Yeah.
There's a K-E-Y in there. That's key.
Efficacious. C-A. Key. Efficacious?
See? Okay, this is what happens when you read phonetically.
No. Well, yeah, wait, but...
Wait a minute. The English
effective,
language...
Okay, and so the synonyms are capable, competent, effective.
See? Those
so
are
when
all
I was
things
saying,
that I called you today.
No, but when I was saying, like, it works the way it's supposed to...
I got you.
Like, they use this word a lot in, like, theological books.
Oh,
and
no wonder you knew that one.
Yeah, so...
You read a lot of those books.
I do. So that's why I said...
I'm reading the
like,
wing.
When used in context, it means like it works the way it's supposed to.
Right.
It's capable.
Right.
It's yeah. So I'm going with that.
I got it. I'm reading the wing.
I bumbled through the explanation.
You're reading Aquinas. It's just what we do.
No, I bumbled through the explanation, but I'm counting that.
Yeah. It's used in all these books. You got another Chesterton book in the mail today.
I did.
I said, can I read that one? And you went, you had to
maybe.
You had to think about it. Maybe.
It's the thin one.
Yeah. It's the thin one.
It's one of the thin ones.
It might only take you a month.
No, you know, a friend of mine came up to me last week and in our homeschool group. So I teach in our homeschool group and one of the other teachers is one of my good friends. And she came up to me and she said, she had this book in her hand. I couldn't see what it was. And she comes barging in my classroom as I'm setting up. And she goes, I have to talk to you. I need your help. I'm like, okay,
right.
What's wrong? She goes, I started this book last night and I spent 2 hours and I've only gotten through 2 pages and I don't understand what I'm reading and I can't understand what's going on. I said, what are you reading? And she turns the book around and it was a Chesterton book.
Right.
The Chesterton book was called What's Wrong with the World. And I said, wait, so let me get this straight. You spent about 2 hours and you got through about 2 pages. She goes, yes, I can't believe I'm reading so slowly. I said, that's about right on pace.
Oh.
That's right on pace. I think it was Bishop Barron that said you Chesterton is like sipping champagne. Like you can't, you have to drink it. You have to drink him in slowly. Because everything he says is so carefully and beautifully crafted, every single word. Unlike how I opened the show today,
that's kind of like me, carefully crafted. Every word I say means things.
Hey, speaking of craft,
that's right. And
so
we're recording late at night, so if you hear a yawn, it's just I'm sorry.
Yeah,
but I came home a little bit late because I went to a dear friend John, and he is brewing home brewed beer, which we are going to have for our upcoming beer fest in our church. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah, a couple Saturdays ago, you actually
we're not selling
his
beer
because it was like making
it's a homebrew. But yeah,
it was like making beer tea. You said right?
Oh, it was awesome. Yeah, you just soaked the grains in there, and it was great. It was a good time. I'd never seen the production from beginning to end. And he like we had some last year. It was
how phenomenal. Big were those pots you had going? Because they were like. How many of those pots did you
have?
We
had three.
They were like turkey fryer pots, right?
Yeah, bigger than that.
Oh, bigger than that.
Yeah, they were, I think I couldn't it was tell a from the 16 picture. Gallon pot.
Wow.
I think we had three with maybe three 16 gallon pots going. Huh. It was a big thing. Tonight we went and bottled 50 something bottles, and then we set up the staging for the next 150 bottles that we've got to make.
Wow.
So all in all, we're making a couple of hundred bottles for the beer tasting, which is going to be phenomenal.
When is that?
End of April. Yep. And what's funny is, we're doing this with the Knights of Columbus. And one of the things that we kind of made out is we really want to get the Spanish community in our parish much more involved. So one of the brother knights he's from Mexico and goes to the Spanish Mass, and he majored in college in translation. So he took.
Oh, I didn't even know that.
Yeah, he did.
Oh,
he majored in college in translation. He's a high school teacher.
Oh.
And he translated the sign for us. And I don't really want to be a Knights of Columbus anymore. I want to be the Spanish version, Los Caballeros de Colón. I want to be a Los Caballeros.
You sound like
de
an
Colón.
ESPN commercial.
Well, because when when I used to live in New York, my favorite thing in the world were those radio commercials where it'd be like, "Un grande fiesta at George Washington Bridge mañana."
Yeah.
Yeah, I love those commercials. But it's going to be a good time. So we'll have a website out on it. Actually the website's up, and I'll put some information on it.
Oh, give it a plug. What is it? Is it live yet?
It is live. It's kofcbeerfest.com.
There you go.
So
go check it out.
Yeah, it'll be fun.
If you're local, we're going to be super fun.
Local to
Houston.
It
was really fun. This will be the second annual. It was really fun last year.
Yeah, we had a blast. We ordered too much beer, which I didn't think there was such a thing. There's such a thing.
Hey, it was a generous amount of beer that people got, because they're all, there's six different kinds.
Six different pairs, and then they get a pint of their choosing and all the food that goes with it.
Right. So each beer is specifically paired with a handcrafted
that's awesome.
Food pairing. Yep. that usually gets recipe tested in our kitchen with a bunch of the knights.
Yep. And that gets to be flatulent.
Oh, brother.
After a while.
It is terrible. We throw open the windows.
There's eight men in our kitchen, and it's not good. It seems like eight men were in our kitchen.
And
we're
occasionally not, Father Richard drops
and,
by.
And we're not small men.
No, there's nothing small about that group.
Yeah.
No.
I mean, we're all over 6 feet tall for the most part. And all of us, let's put it this way, none of us are going to be in any swimsuit competitions anytime soon.
Living out your faith virtuously.
That's right. So I had a topic that I thought would be kind of cool, because you hear stories about martyrs, and I thought it'd be neat to just kind of take one and look at it. And really, then you did some research. I know that's hard to believe, on martyrs and what it means and what they are. And I actually took one that I first discovered years ago. So I used to travel all over the world teaching investing classes. And the campus that I would go teach in the UK was in a little town called St. Albans. And so St. Albans was named after, I know it's going to be hard to believe,
St. Alban.
So it's named after St. Alban. Now, St. Alban was from roughly 251 AD. So he is the first Briton saint.
Hmm.
Yeah, he's the first Briton saint. And it was in the Roman city of Verulamium. 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 And so
that sounds like an element from the periodic table.
It actually does sound like an element from the periodic table. And what's funny is when I went to the city, you cannot miss this gigantic, gigantic gigantic church. It is a cathedral. It is humongous. And it's a beautiful cathedral, right? So you can't miss it. It's right in the center of town. It is an Anglican church now. And it is, like I said, ginormous. And so when you step in, it's beautiful. It started off, it was built in they started having pilgrimages to the site starting in the 300s, something like that. And there were Saint Albans Abbey monks started producing things like in the 13th century, and the church as they know it today has been around since the 1400s. Mm. I mean, it's just been around. The church is so old, and I remembered going there, and what was fun was going around the city. Now, by the way, the city itself, the town of St. Albans, if anybody ever goes to London or you wind up going to the UK, take the train ride up to St. Albans.
Because it's only like 45 minutes.
It's like a 45-minute train ride.
It's so worth it.
I don't even know if it was that long of a train ride. And it's the town itself. First of all, they've got amazing pubs. Yeah. But the town itself is like you stepped into a Dickens novel.
Yeah.
It's just got that old small town feel, but it's all centered and built around this gigantic church.
Like most medieval cities.
Yeah. Yeah. That's it. And it's built around this gigantic church. And what happened is that, St. Alban was scourged and took a whipping because he bore these torments patiently and joyfully, because when he had declared himself to be Christian and he was protecting another Christian. And so what
a priest, got, in fact,
he was protecting a priest.
He was hiding that priest.
What got him in trouble was protecting the priest, and he refused to comply with the pagan rites of the Roman religion. And he declared, "I worship and adore the true and living God who created all things." And that's the prayer, that words that are still used in St. Albans Abbey. Mm-hmm. And when you go there, they still have relics of St. Alban inside the very center of the church.
Mm. I remember when we went there, the information we got on St. Alban, he was hiding a Catholic priest.
Right.
And he, while he was hiding him, he was converted.
He had his conversion.
Yeah. Because he so admired the faith of this priest. But when they came to get the priest, he dressed as the priest to continue hiding the priest. And when they found out what he was doing and that he wasn't actually the priest, they wanted him to, you know, denounce his faith,
right,
and to worship as the pagans did. And he told them that whatever sacrifices they were offering and they wanted him to offer was actually a sacrifice to Satan, and he was not going to do it because they were pagan sacrifices. And they said, after being so basically they were just so irritated by the fact that he wasn't giving in, they said, "All right, well, whatever we were going to do to that priest, we're going to do to you." And so he willingly gave his, you know, he gave his life.
Well, and there's a river that runs through town called the River Ver. Like, see, couldn't it just be called the River? The River Ver.
The River Ver.
And now it's not a very big river. There's not a lot of water kind of flowing through it. I mean, it's cute that they call it a river. I call it a creek. Mm. I'm sorry, it's a crick.
A crick.
Ian's going down a crick. I call it a creek. But it was a very, very fast flowing river that could not be crossed. And so as he was led to the execution, there was a bridge, but there was a ton of townspeople who wanted to watch the execution. So they clogged up the bridge, and the execution party couldn't get across, right? And they couldn't get across any other way. Well, you know, the filled, like, he really wanted to go home, and filled with his ardent desire to get quickly there, he raised his eyes to heaven and the river dried up. Mm-hmm.
I don't remember that part.
Yeah, allowing Alban and his captors to cross over on dry land.
Wow.
The astonished executioner cast down his sword and fell at Albin's feet. And then he, moved by divine inspiration, that he either suffers with Albin or be executed for him. So what really happened was, is that the executioner then got executed at the same time St. Albin did. Mm. And so it's an interesting story. Now, by the way, when I went there, it's a pilgrimage site. Lots of people pilgrimage there, and he's the patron saint of conversions.
Yeah.
So I actually brought home a pilgrimage medal for a friend of mine who had converted, and I thought it was kind of neat to kind of bring that home for him. So
yeah, and I want to maybe use this as an opportunity to talk about the fact that he was an actual martyr,
right?
And that term gets thrown around a lot, especially recently, because millions of Christians are being persecuted and killed every day. But just because a Christian is killed doesn't make them a martyr.
Okay.
Right. There's more elements that go into that equation, so to speak. And the church has been very clear on this, and it has not changed. But Pope Benedict had written basically a statement, affirming the teaching of the church. And he wrote, it was basically like, it was an apostolic letter, but it was basically like a little pat on the head reminder, like, let's remember what a martyr actually is. And he had written this apostolic letter to the Congregation for the Causes of Saints. And it just reemphasized the church's traditional understanding of what a martyr is. And so it's what he defined martyrdom as is the voluntary enduring. This is right from Pope Benedict. So, quote, the voluntary enduring or tolerating of death on account of the faith of Christ, or another act of virtue in reference to God, end quote. So there's two components there. It's on the part of the person who is killed, there's a voluntary enduring or tolerating of death.
Right.
On the part of the person who is doing the killing, there must be a hatred of the faith. So you have to be killed by someone who hates the faith, and you are basically not really trying to fight back, right? I mean, you're voluntarily enduring or tolerating death,
right?
So
like in the St. Albin story, the judge who didn't tolerate it because he thought he was blaspheming the pagan gods.
Exactly. So there was a hatred of the faith, and clearly St. Albin went enduring and willingly, you know, tolerating the death, his own death.
So you know, that would seem like that's something, because I've heard that there's more martyrs created in the 20th century than ever in the history of all time. Mm-hmm. You know, are they, so somebody who hates the Christian religion, who bombs a school, mm-hmm. right? Would those people be considered martyrs?
Not according to this, no.
Right.
Because I shouldn't say that. There would need to be sufficient evidence that they were willing to die when the bomb went off and killed them.
Right.
Right. They were willing to die for their faith. If they didn't know, or they tried to, you know, escape or fight back, that doesn't really meet the definition. So for instance, there was
not that we're picking on those people, but
no. It's just like, because martyrs are usually put up for canonization. Right. And so you can't just be like, well, we feel bad for them, so we can make them saint. Like, it doesn't work that way, you know? So, I mean, it is tragic. The persecution of Christians is tragic, but if we're talking about the technical definition of a martyr, this is what it is, to be eligible for a sainthood, it's freely and consciously giving in a supreme act of love, witnessing their faith to Christ. So there has to be that component there, right? The recent, I haven't been able to, I haven't seen any, like on EWTN News or Catholic Register or anything like that. I haven't seen any updates on the priest who was killed, last year, remember, by ISIS saying mass. Do you remember that story? Father Jacques Hamel?
Yes.
He was like in the process, I think it was like actually during consecration. That may not be accurate, but I think it was.
That was in Syria?
Was
that the one, that was the Indian priest?
No. Father Jacques was French.
Oh.
Right?
I guess that would make sense with a name like Jacques.
I can pull it up. But he was, here it is, Father Jacques Hamel. But he was killed while he was saying mass. He was a French Catholic priest in the parish of, I can't pronounce that. He was murdered during the 2016 Normandy church attack by two Muslim men.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So, I cannot pronounce Saint-Étienne du...
Your French isn't that good.
No, I took like 6 weeks of French in fifth grade in Catholic school because one of the moms spoke French. So she came in for like 5 weeks. And the only thing that I remember how to say is Je m'appelle le pamplemousse. My name is grapefruit.
That's an awesome.
That's the only thing I
love
remember.
The word pamplemousse.
That's the only thing I remember. Anyway, so Father Jacques, he was saying mass and he was murdered. And
I speak Pepe Le Pew, Mon Chéri.
The boys love that cartoon. Yeah. We showed it to them.
Mon Chéri.
Anyway, so they were he was murdered by two Muslim men pledging allegiance to the Islamic State of Iraq. So they were he was killed by ISIS, clearly people who hated the faith,
right?
Okay, so we have that side of the equation. I think right now they're trying to figure out what did he they slit his throat.
Oh.
Did he die willingly? Did he try to fight back? I think they're trying to figure out through witness accounts and things like that what what actually happened. So I have not been able to find any updates, on, the status of his martyrdom. I'm not sure if it's come out. I know that there's a lot of commentary about it,
right,
but I don't know if the Vatican has any, said anything specific about it. But there are many, 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 martyrs who have been canonized or are on en route to canonization. Ever since Pope John Paul II, there's been just an influx of canonizations, causes for canonization, beatifications, and things of that nature. So,
well, and that's obviously horrors on its own.
Mm-hmm.
That there's that many causes for mm-hmm. martyrs to be created. But mm-hmm. I think that it's always interesting and the reason we brought this up is because, sometimes we need topics. Sometimes people need to send us some topics. And I said, well, what if we don't have any topics? Why don't we just go find a martyr and talk about it? Cause there's so many things to hear about in the story. I didn't even finish the whole St. Alban story.
Mm.
When St. Alban finally did get executed, he walked to the top of a hill, and said that he thirsted, and miraculously a spring of water came up from the ground.
Wait, after he was executed?
Before he was executed.
Oh, before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, before he was executed, and the spring came up from the ground. So when you see paintings of St. Alban, sometimes you'll see water coming up from the ground.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then once he was executed, the executioner who executed him and the first executioner, his eyes popped out of his head so he couldn't even enjoy it.
Oh.
Yeah. Brutal.
Mm.
Yeah.
And I think this was also a really good topic to bring up too, because we are in the season of Lent.
Right.
Right. And so last week we had talked about this new myth that is surfacing about it's okay. You don't need to really fast. Just add more stuff to Lent.
Right.
Add some more prayer. And we had a lot to say about that last week. But, you know, if you feel like you're Superman for giving up chocolate and wine, like,
go read about a martyr.
Go check yourself. You know what I mean? Like, right. There's people.
And first
who,
of all, I gave up red meat. I think I am a martyr.
Yeah. You know, Lent's not about self-improvement and diets. So, but
this is terrible. I haven't had bacon in days.
Yeah. So, but I think it's a, you know, it allows us to get some perspective on people who really did have the fervency of faith. And it was so strong that they were willing to endure and patiently tolerate their own deaths.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there have been some horrific, horrific martyrs, you know, throughout the history of the church. Like, the first ever martyr, right, is Saint Stephen.
Uh-huh.
And we celebrate his feast day right after Christmas, actually. And stoning is traditionally associated with how Saint Stephen was martyred, and he was martyred right after Christ.
I gotta tell
was crucified.
I'd rather take the beheading than the stoning.
It's terrible, but he died just a few years after Christ was crucified in Jerusalem. He was one of the first seven deacons chosen by the early Christian community, and, you know, of course, was an evangelist. But he was the first martyr. And then my mom tells a story of when I was little. I think she said I was like two. And so I grew up in New Jersey, and
right,
there were many, 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 many processions on feast days of saints, like out in the streets, and the churches would throw huge party festivals on the feast days of these saints.
There was a festival.
There was always
in New Jersey.
Exactly. There was always a festival, and they would even do like the novenas up, you know, the 9 days of prayer, like up
right
to the feast day, and all those nights there would be something different going on, festivals and everything, and on the day of the actual feast day there would be parades, you know, honoring. Of course, we're not worshiping statues. That's not what this podcast is about, but you know, it's processing the statue just in honor and remembrance of that, you know, that family member who's now in heaven, who gave their life for
right
Jesus Christ. So, in this particular feast, it was the feast of Saint Sebastian. Now, Saint Sebastian is typically pictured full of arrows, right?
Ooh, okay.
So, down the street comes this statue of Saint Sebastian, and, you know, it's a 3D statue, like 3D statue,
sure,
and pierced with dozens and dozens of arrows. And my mom said, I did not respond kindly.
No, you didn't like that? No, freaked you out?
Yeah. So that was, but ironically, Saint Stephen didn't actually die from the arrows. So they tried to martyr him, and they tried to martyr him with arrows,
mm-hmm,
right? And they left him for dead, thinking that all of these dozens and dozens and dozens of arrows actually killed him, but they didn't.
Those were not very good arrows.
No. So what's so crazy, he wasn't actually dead. So he was sentenced to be killed. They shot him full of arrows, and he didn't die. So he was found by a woman who later was canonized. It's Saint Irene, who nursed him back to health. And he then went back and took another chance, appearing before the Emperor Diocletian, right? We know about Diocletian, not friendly to Christians.
No.
And the emperor was so pissed.
Diocletian divided the Roman Empire.
He sure did. That's right. You know that from the
followed
time
by Constantine legalizing Christianity.
That's right.
And then India's Gupta dynasty.
That's right. Look at that.
Of Nicaea, Augustine of Hippo.
Right in order. Right in order. And so the emperor had him clubbed to death.
Oh.
Yeah.
I bet she was wishing the arrows did the job.
Mm-hmm. And then his body was dumped into a Roman sewer.
Yeah, so, you can stop me at clubbing.
It's gruesome the way, you know, some of these martyrs have died. St. Lawrence was, ready for this, grilled.
Grilled, like...
Like you gave up red meat. He was grilled.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
And he lived in the 3rd century. He was a deacon under Pope Sixtus II in the 3rd century. Legend states that he, okay, so he was grilled, but the part of the story that we, you know, is legend. We don't know if it's exactly true.
Right.
I mean, he was martyred. He was grilled, but there's a legend side story that, recorded by his hagiographers, that he bore his slow torture stoically, even quipping in the style of a modern day action film hero. He said, "Turn me over. I'm cooked on that side." I mean, that's someone who patiently endures their death at the hands of people who hate the faith.
Either that,
I mean, that's somebody, a martyr.
Either that or it's somebody from a Michael Bay movie.
True. But this is an actual, like, bona fide saint.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So, you know, if you're ever looking for things to read, just Google martyrs. You'll find a lot of them, and they're all interesting short reads that can help put a little bit of your struggles into perspective.
Yeah. And I think too, you know, that's sort of a negative, what, you know, that's, well, it's sort of negative. Like if you're struggling, you're looking for, you know, some hope and stuff, but on a positive spin too, these saints are family members in heaven, right? We're all brothers and sisters in Christ. We're joined to them through the mystical body of Christ, because right. Our God is God of the living, not God of the dead. And there are all of the saints demonstrate that there are so many paths to holiness. And so that's one of the beautiful things about the Catholic faith, is that we have so many different charisms that are highlighted through all the different orders, the Franciscans, the Dominicans, the Carmelites, who are so near and dear to my heart. And there's so many saints that are, some of them were monks and priests and religious as part of those orders, and some were lay people, but they all demonstrated that there's many paths to holiness. And so I think I've mentioned on the podcast before, but like, try and find a saint or two that you identify with, and
your peeps,
and then try and find a saint or two that is like, I am not like that person at all, and learn something about them, you know, and maybe they can help round you out, so to speak, and work on not necessarily a weakness, but maybe something that you hadn't thought about before, you know, in terms of developing, you know, your own faith and relationship with Christ. And Lent is a beautiful time to go do that. As long as we're fasting and denying, it will leave room for us to have that desire well up in us for that relationship with God. And we have all of these beautiful saints examples to lead us. So
excellent.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, if you guys have any podcast topics, please go to the website, saltandlightonline.com, and send them to us. We'd love to...
Yeah, just fill out one of the contact us forms.
Yeah, fill out a contact us form. Let us know what you would like us to talk about. Or once again, someday I'm just going to start singing. It's going to be a problem.
You keep threatening that. You may actually have to do that.
I'm going to do it one day.
Yeah, because it's been a couple weeks since people sent a topic in.
Immediately our listenership will go to like -2.
Probably.
People will sue us for pain and suffering. Yeah.
That would be terrible.
Yeah. So, all right. Until next week.
St. Anthony the Abbot.
Pray for us.
Peace be with you.
You've been listening to the Salt and Light Podcast. Be salt and light, glorifying the Lord by your life.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media. Find more about us at breadboxmedia.com.